This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Heart of Betrayal, The Remnant Chronicles, Book 2, by Mary E. Pearson. Read for you by Emily Rankin, with Ryan Gazelle, Kirby Hayborn, Kim My Guest, and Anne Marie Lee.
Her tears, they ride the wind. She calls to me, and all I can do is whisper. You are strong, stronger than your pain, stronger than your grief, stronger than them. The Last Testaments of Gaudrell. Chapter 1.
One swift act. I had thought that was all it would take. A knife in the gut. A firm twist for good measure. But as Venda swallowed me up, as the misshapen walls and hundreds of curious faces closed in, as I heard the clatter of chains and the bridge lowering behind me, cutting me off from the rest of the world, I knew my steps had to be certain. Flawless. It was going to take many acts, not just one. Every step renegotiated. Lies would have to be told. Confidences gained. Ugly lines crossed. All of it patiently woven together. And patience wasn't my strong suit. But first, more than anything, I had to find a way to make my heart stop pummeling my chest. Find my breath. Appear calm. Fear was the blood scent for wolves. The curious inched closer, peering at me with half-open mouths that revealed rotten teeth. Were they amused or sneering? And there was the jingle of skulls. The gathering rattle of dry bones rippled through the crowd as they jockeyed to get a better look. Strings of small, sun-bleached heads, femurs and teeth waving from their belts as they pressed forward to see me, and to see Rafe. I knew he walked shackled somewhere behind me at the end of the caravan. Prisoners, both of us. And Venda didn't take prisoners. At least they never had before. We were more than a curiosity. We were the enemy they had never seen. And that was exactly what they were to me. We walked past endless jutting turrets, layers of twisted stone walls blackened with soot and age, slithering like a filthy living beast, a city built of ruin and whim. The roar of the river faded behind me. I'll get us both out of this. Rafe had to be questioning his promise to me now. We passed through another set of massive, jagged gates, toothy iron bars mysteriously opening for us as if our arrival was anticipated. Our caravan grew smaller as groups of soldiers veered in different directions now that they were home. They disappeared down snaking paths shadowed by tall walls. The Chievdar led what remained of us, and the wagons of booty jingled in front of me as we walked into the belly of the city. Was Rafe still somewhere behind me, or had they taken him down one of those miserable alleyways? Caden swung down from his horse and walked beside me. We're almost there. A wave of nausea hit me. Walther's dead, I reminded myself. My brother is dead. There was nothing more they could take from me. Except Rafe. I had more than myself to think about now. This changed everything. Where is there? I tried to ask calmly, but my words tripped out hoarse and uneven. We're going to the sanctum, our version of court, where the leaders meet. And the Commissar. Let me do the talking, Leah. Just this once. Please, don't say a word. I looked at Caden. His jaw was tight, and his brows pulled low, as if his head ached. Was he nervous to greet his own leader? Afraid of what I might say? Or what the Komazar would do? Would it be considered an act of treason that he hadn't killed me as he was ordered? His blonde hair hung in greasy, tired strands well past his shoulders now. His face was slick with oil and grime. It had been a long time since either of us had seen soap, but that was the least of our problems. We approached another gate, this one a towering flat wall of iron pocked with rivets and slits. Eyes peered through them. I heard shouts from behind it, and the heavy clang of a bell. It juddered through me, each ring shivering in my teeth. Tsu Victara. Stand strong. I forced my chin higher, almost feeling Rena's fingertips lifting it. Slowly the wall split in two and the gates rolled back, permitting our entry into an enormous open area as misshapen and bleak as the rest of the city. It was bordered on all sides by walls, towers, and the beginnings of narrow streets that disappeared into shadows. Winding crenellated walkways loomed above us, each one overtaking and melting into the next. The Chievdar moved forward, and the wagons piled in behind him. Guards in the inner court shouted their welcomes, then happily bellowed approval at the stash of swords and saddles and the glittering tangle of plunder piled high on the wagons, all that was left of my brother and his comrades. My throat tightened, for I knew that soon one of them would be wearing Walther's baldric and carrying his sword. My fingers curled into my palm, but I didn't even have so much as a nail left to stab my own skin. All of them were torn to the quick. I rubbed my raw fingertips, and a fierce ache shook my chest. It caught me by surprise, this small loss of my nails compared to the enormity of everything else. It was almost a mocking whisper that I had nothing, not even a fingernail, to defend myself. All I had was a secret name that seemed as useless to me right now as the title I was born with. "Make it true, Leah," I told myself. But even as I said the words in my head, I felt my confidence ebbing. I had far more at stake now than I'd had just a few hours ago. Now my actions could hurt Rafe, too. Orders were given to unload the ill-gotten treasure and carry it inside, and boys younger than Eben scurried over with small two-wheeled carts to the sides of the wagon and helped the guards fill them. The Chievdar and his personal guard dismounted and walked up steps that led to a long corridor. The boys followed behind, pushing the overflowing carts up a nearby ramp, their thin arms straining under the weight. Some of the booty in their loads was still stained with blood. "That way to Sanctum Hall," Caden said, pointing after the boys. Yes, nervous. I could hear it in his tone. If even he was afraid of the Komazar, what chance did I have? I stopped and turned, trying to spot Rafe somewhere back in the line of soldiers still coming through the gate, but all I could see was Malik leading his horse, following close behind us. He grinned, his face still bearing the slash marks from my attack.
"Welcome to Venda, princess," he jeered. "I promise you, things will be very different now."
Caden pulled me around, keeping me close to his side.
"Stay near," he whispered, "for your own good."
Malik laughed, reveling in his threat, but for once, I knew what he said was true. Everything was different now, more than Malik could even guess.
Chapter 2.
Sanctum Hall was little more than a dismal tavern, albeit a cavernous one. Four of Bertie's taverns could have fit within its walls. It smelled of spilled ale, damp straw, and overindulgence. Columns lined the four sides, and it was lit with torches and lanterns. The high ceiling was covered in soot, and an enormous rough wooden table sat heavy and abused in the center. Pewter tankards rested on the table or swung from meaty fists. The leaders. Caden and I hung back in the shadowed walkway behind the columns, but the leaders greeted the Chievdar and his personal guard with boisterous shouts and slapping of backs. Tankards were offered and raised to the returning soldiers with calls to bring more ale. I saw Eben, shorter than some of the serving boys, lifting a pewter cup to his lips, a returning soldier the same as the rest. Caden pushed me slightly behind him in a protective manner, but I still scanned the room, trying to spot the Komazar, trying to be ready, prepared for what was to come. Several of the men were huge, like Grizz, some even bigger, and I wondered what kind of creatures, both human and beast, this strange land produced. I kept my eyes on one of them. He snarled every word, and the scurrying boys ran a respectful wide distance around him. I thought that he had to be the Komazar, but I saw Caden's eyes scouring the room, too, and they passed over the burly brute. "These are the Legion of Governors," he said, as if he had read my mind. "They rule the provinces." Venda had provinces? And a hierarchy, too, beyond assassins, marauders, and an iron-fisted Komazar? The governors were distinguished from the servants and soldiers by black fur epaulets on their shoulders. The fur was crowned with a bronze clasp shaped like the bared teeth of an animal. It made their physiques appear twice as wide and formidable. The ruckus rose to a deafening roar, echoing off the stone walls and bare floors. There was only a pile of straw in one corner of the room to absorb any noise. The boys parked the carts of booty along one row of pillars, and the governors perused the hall, lifting swords, testing weights, and rubbing forearms on leather breastplates to polish away dried blood. They examined the goods as if they were at a marketplace. I saw one of them pick up a sword inlaid with red jasper on the hilt. Walther's sword. My foot automatically moved forward, but I caught myself and forced it back into place. Not yet. "Wait here," Caden whispered, and stepped out of the shadows. I inched closer to a pillar, trying to get my bearings. I saw three dark hallways that led into Sanctum Hall, in addition to the one we had entered through. Where did they go, and were they guarded like the one behind me? And most important, did any of them lead to Rafe?
"Where's the Komazar?"
Caden asked in Venden, speaking to no one in particular, his voice barely cutting through the din. One governor turned, and then another. The room grew suddenly quiet.
"The assassin is here,"
said an anonymous voice somewhere at the other end. There was an uncomfortable pause, and then one of the shorter governors, a stout man with multiple red braids that fell past his shoulders, barreled forward and threw his arms around Caden, welcoming him home. The noise resumed, but at a noticeably lower level, and I wondered at the effect an assassin's presence had on them. It reminded me of Malik, and how he had reacted to Caden on the long trek across the Camlanteau. He'd had blood in his eye and was equally matched, but he'd still backed down when Caden stood his ground.
"The Komazar's been called," the governor told Caden. "That is, if he comes. He's occupied with a visitor," Caden finished.
The governor laughed.
That she is. The kind of visitor I'd like to have.
More governors walked over, and one with a long, crooked nose shoved a tankard in Caden's hand. He welcomed him home and berated him for being gone for so long on holiday. Another governor chided him, saying he was away from Venda more than he was here.
I go where the Komazar sends me, Caden answered.
One of the other governors, as big as a bull and with a chest just as wide, lifted his drink in a toast.
As do we all,
he replied and threw back his head, taking a long, careless swig. Ale sloshed out the sides of his mug and dripped down his beard to the floor. Even this taurine giant hopped when the Komazar snapped his fingers, and he wasn't afraid to admit it. Though they spoke only in Venden, I was able to understand nearly everything they said. I knew far more than just the choice words of Venda. Weeks of immersion in their language across the Camlanteau had cured my ignorance. As Caden answered their questions about his journey, my gaze became fixed on another governor pulling a finely tooled baldric from the cart and trying to force it around his generous gut. I felt dizzy, sick, and then rage bubbled up through my veins. I closed my eyes. Not yet. Don't get yourself killed in the first 10 minutes. That can come later. I took a deep breath, and when I opened my eyes again, I spotted a face in the shadows. Someone on the other side of the hall was watching me. I couldn't look away. Only a slash of light illuminated his face. His dark eyes were expressionless, but at the same time compelling, fixed like a wolf stalking prey, in no hurry to spring, confident. He casually leaned against a pillar, a younger man than the governor's, smooth-faced except for a precise line of beard at his chin and a thin, carefully clipped mustache. His dark hair was unkempt, locks curling just above his shoulders. He didn't wear the furred epaulets of a governor on his shoulders, nor the leather vestments of a soldier, only simple tan trousers and a loose white shirt, and he was certainly in no hurry to attend to anyone, so he wasn't a servant either. His eyes moved past me as if bored, and he took in the rest of the scene, governors pawing through carts and swilling ale. And then Caden. I saw him watching Caden. Heat rushed through my stomach. Him. He stepped out past the pillar into the middle of the room, and with his first steps, I knew. This was the Komazar.
"Welcome home, comrades," he called out.
The room was instantly silent. Everyone turned toward the voice, including Caden. The Komazar walked slowly across the expanse, and anyone in his path moved back. I stepped out from the shadows to stand by Caden's side, and a low rumble ran through the room. The Komazar stopped a few feet from us, ignoring me and staring at Caden, then finally came forward to embrace him with a genuine welcome. When he released Caden and took a step back, he looked at me with a cool, blank gaze. I couldn't quite believe that this was the Komazar. His face was smooth and unwrinkled, a man just a few years older than Walther. More like an older brother to Caden than a fearsome leader. He wasn't exactly the formidable dragon of the Song of Venda, the one who drank blood and stole dreams. His stature was only average, nothing daunting about him at all, except for his unwavering stare.
"What's this?"
he asked in Mouragese, almost as flawless as Caden's, nodding his head toward me. a game player. He knew exactly who I was and wanted to be sure I understood every word.
"Princess Arabella, first daughter of the House of Morrigan," Caden answered.
Another restrained hush ran through the room. The Komazar chuckled.
"Her? A princess?"
He slowly circled around me, viewing my rags and filth as if in disbelief. He paused at my side, where the fabric was torn from my shoulder and the kava was exposed. He uttered a quiet, as if mildly amused, then ran the back of his finger down the length of my arm. My skin crawled, but I lifted my chin, as if he were merely an annoying fly buzzing about the room. He completed his circle until he faced me again. He grunted.
"Not very impressive, is she? But then, most royals aren't. About as entrancing as a bowl of week-old mush."
Only a month ago, I would have jumped at the baited remark, tearing him to shreds with a few hot words. But now I wanted to do far more than insult him. I returned his gaze with one of my own, matching his empty expression blink for blink. He rubbed the back of his hand along the line of his thin, carefully sculpted beard, studying me.
"It's been a long journey," Caden explained. "A hard one for her."
The Komazar raised his brows, feigning surprise.
"It needn't have been," he said.
He raised his voice so the whole hall would be sure to hear, though his words were still directed at Caden.
"I seem to remember I ordered you to slice her throat, not bring her back as a pet."
Tension sparked in the air. No one lifted a tankard to their lips. No one moved. Perhaps they waited for the Komazar to walk over to the carts, draw a sword, and send my head rolling down the middle of the room, which certainly in their eyes was his right. Caden had defied him. But there was something between Caden and the Komazar, something I still didn't quite understand. A hold of some sort.
"She has the gift," Caden explained. "I thought she'd be more useful to Venda alive than dead."
At the mention of the word gift, I saw glances exchanged among the servants and governors, but still, no one said a word. The Komazar smiled, at once chilling and magnetic. My neck prickled. This was a man who knew how to control a room with the lightest touch. He was showing his hand. Once I knew his strengths, I might discover his weaknesses, too. Everyone had them, even the feared Komazar.
"The gift!"
He laughed and turned to everyone else, expecting them to laugh in kind. They did. He looked back to me, the smile gone, then reached out and took my hand in his. He examined my injuries, his thumb gently skimming the back of my hand.
"Does she have a tongue?"
This time it was Malik who laughed, stepping over to the table in the center of the room and slamming down his mug.
"Like a cackling hyena. And her bite is just as nasty."
The Chievdar spoke up, concurring. Murmurs rose from the soldiers.
"And yet," the Komazar said, turning back to me, "she remains silent."
"Leah," Caden whispered, nudging me with his arm. "You can speak."
I looked at Caden. He thought I didn't know that? Did he really think it was his warning that had silenced me? I had been silenced far too many times by those who exerted power over me. Not here. My voice would be heard, but I'd speak when it served my purposes. I betrayed neither word nor expression. The Komazar and his governors were no different from the throngs I had passed on my way here. They were curious. A real princess of Morrigan. I was on display. The Komazar wanted me to perform before him and his legion of governors. Did they expect jewels to spill from my mouth? More likely, whatever I said would find ridicule, just as my appearance already had. Or the back of his hand. There were only two things a man in the Komazar's position expected, defiance or groveling, and I was certain that neither would improve my lot. Though my pulse raced, I didn't break his gaze. I blinked slowly, as if I were bored. "Yes, Komazar, I've already learned your tics."
"Not to worry, my friends," he said, waving his hand in the air and dismissing my silence. "There's so much more to talk about. Like all of this."
His hand swept the room from one end to the other at the display of carts. He laughed like he was delighted with the haul.
"What do we have?"
He started at one end, going from cart to cart, digging through the plunder. I noticed that though the governors had searched it, nothing appeared to have been taken yet. Perhaps they knew to wait until the Komazar chose first. He lifted a hatchet, running a finger along the blade, nodding as if impressed, and then moved on to the next cart, drawing out a falchion and swinging it in front of him. Its sheen cut through the air and drew approving comments. He smiled.
"You did well, Jevdar."
"Well? Massacring a whole company of young men?" He tossed the curved blade back into the cart and moved on to the next one.
"And what's this?"
He reached in and pulled out a long strap of leather. "Walther's baldric." "Not him. Anyone but him." I felt my knees weaken, and a small noise escaped my throat. He turned in my direction, holding it up.
"The tooling is exceptional, don't you think? Look at these vines."
He slowly slid the strap through his fingers.
"And the leather, so buttery. Something fit for a crown prince, no?"
He lifted it over his head and adjusted it across his chest as he walked back to me, stopping an arm's length away.
"What do you think, princess?"
Tears sprang to my eyes. I, too, had foolishly played my hand. I was still too raw with Walther's loss to think. I looked away, but he grabbed my jaw, his fingers gouging into my skin. He forced me to look back at him.
"You see, princess? This is my kingdom, not yours. And I have ways of making you speak that you cannot even begin to fathom. You will sing like a clipped canary if I command it."
"Komazar." Caden's voice was low and earnest. He released me and smiled, gently caressing my cheek.
"I think the princess is tired from her long journey. Ulrix, take the princess to the holding room so she can rest for a moment, and Caden and I can talk. We have a lot to discuss."
He glanced at Caden, the first sign of anger flashing through his eyes. Caden looked at me, hesitating, but there was nothing he could do.
"Go," he said. "It'll be all right."
Once we were out of Caden's sight, the guards all but dragged me down the hallway, their wrist cuffs stabbing into my arms. I still felt the pressure of the Komazar's fingers against my face. My jaw throbbed where his fingers had dug in. In just a few brief minutes, he had perceived something I cared about deeply and used it to hurt me and, ultimately, weaken me. I had braced myself to be beaten or whipped, but not for that. The vision still burned my eyes, my brother's baldric proudly splayed across the enemy's chest in the cruelest taunt, waiting for me to crumble. And I had. Round one to the Komazar. He had overtaken me, not with quick condemnation or brute force, but with stealth and careful observation. I would have to learn to do the same. My indignation mounted as the guards jostled me roughly through the dark hall, seeming to relish having a royal at their mercy. By the time they stopped at a door, my arms were numb under their grip. They unlocked it and threw me into a black room. I fell, the rough stone floor cutting into my knees. I stayed there, stunned and hunched on the ground, breathing in the musty, foul air. Only three thin shafts of light filtered through vents in the upper wall opposite me. As my eyes adjusted to the darkness, I saw a straw-filled mat, the stuffing spilling out onto the floor, a short milking stool, and a bucket. Their holding room had all the comforts of a barbaric cell. I squinted, trying to see more in the dim light, but then I heard a noise, a shuffle in the corner. I wasn't alone. Someone, or something else, was in the room with me.
Let the stories be heard, so all generations will know. The stars bow at the gods' whisper. They fall at their bidding, and only the chosen remnant found grace in their sight. Morrigan, Book of Holy Text, Volume 5. Chapter 3, Caden.
So, you thought she'd be useful.
He knew the true reason. He knew I disdained the gift as much as he did, but his contempt for the gift sprang from lack of belief. I had more compelling reasons. We sat alone in his private meeting chamber. He leaned back in his chair, his tented hands tapping his lips. His black eyes rested on me like cool, polished onyx, betraying no emotion. They rarely did. But if not anger, I knew at least curiosity lurked behind them. I looked away, gazing instead at the lush-fringed carpet beneath us. A new addition.
"A goodwill gift from the Premier of Rolau," he explained.
"Goodwill? It looks expensive. Since when do the Rolau bring us gifts?" I asked.
"You thought. Let's get back to that. Is she that good in—"
"No," I said, standing up. I walked to the window. Wind hissed through the gaps. "It's not like that." He laughed.
"Then tell me how it is."
I looked back at his table, overflowing with maps, charts, books, and notes. I was the one who had taught him how to read Morrigese, which most of these documents were. "Tell me how it is." I wasn't sure myself. I returned to my chair across from him and explained Leah's effect on Vendans as hardened as Grizz and Finch. "You know how the clans are, and there are plenty of hill folk who still believe. You can't walk through the Jehendra without seeing a dozen stalls selling talismans. Every other servant here in the sanctum wears one or another tucked beneath their shirt, and probably half the soldiers, too. If they think the Vendans have somehow been blessed with one of the gifts of old, one of royal blood even, you might..." He leaned forward, sweeping papers and maps to the floor with a broad, angry stroke of his arm.
"Do you take me for a fool? You betrayed an order because the backward few of Venda might take her to be a sign? Have you now appointed yourself Komazar to do what you think to be the wiser move?"
"I just thought..." I closed my eyes briefly.
I had already disobeyed his order, and now I was making excuses, just as the Morghese did. I hesitated when I went to kill her.
She caught your fancy, just as I said.
I nodded. Yes. He leaned back in his chair and shook his head, waving his hand as if it was of little matter.
So you succumbed to the charms of a woman. Better that than believing yourself to make better decisions in my stead.
He pushed his chair back and stood, walking over to a tall-footed oil lamp in the corner of the room, jagged crystals rimming it like a crown. When he turned the wheel to increase the flame, splinters of light cut across his face. It was a gift from the Tomac Quarterlord and didn't fit the severity of the room. He tugged the short hair of his beard, lost in thought, and then his eyes rested on me once again.
No harm done bringing her here. She's out of the hands of Morrigan and Dalbrec, which is all that matters. And yes, now that she's here, I'll decide the best way to use her. The governor's hushed surprise at the royal in their midst wasn't lost on me, nor the whispering of servants when she left.
A half-smile played on his lips, and he rubbed at a smudge on the lantern with his sleeve.
Yes. She might prove useful, he whispered,
more to himself than to me, as if warming to the idea. He turned, remembering I was still in the room.
Enjoy your pet for now, but don't get too attached. The brethren of the sanctum aren't like the hill folk. We don't settle into flabby domestic lives. Remember that. Our brotherhood and Venda always come first. It's how we survive. Our countrymen are counting on us. We're their hope.
Of course, I answered, and it was true. Without the Komazar, even without Malik, I'd be dead by now. But don't get too attached. It was too late for that. He returned to his desk, shuffling through papers, then stopped to look at a map and smiled. I knew the smile. He had many. When he had smiled at Leah, I'd feared the worst. The one on his face now was genuine, a satisfied smile, meant for no one to see. Your plans are going well?
Our plans, he corrected me. Better than I hoped. I have great things to show you, but it will have to wait. You made it back just in time before I ride out tomorrow. The governors of Balwood and Arleston didn't show.
Dead?
Most likely for Balwood. Either the sickness of the North Country finally got him, or he lost his head to a young usurper too frightened to come to the sanctum himself.
My guess was that Hedwin of Balwood had succumbed to a sword in the back. Just as he always boasted, he was too mean for the withering sickness of the North Woods to overtake him. And Arleston? We both knew that Governor Tierney of the southernmost province was probably lying in a drunken stupor in some brothel on the road to the sanctum, and would stroll in with apologies featuring lame horses and bad weather. But his tithe of supplies to the city never wavered. The Komazar shrugged.
Hot-blooded young men can grow weary of well-oiled governors.
As the Komazar had 11 years ago. I looked at him, still every bit the young man who had slaughtered 3 governors right before he killed the previous Komazar of Venda, but he wasn't so hot-blooded anymore. No, now his blood ran cool and steady. It's been a long time since there have been any challenges, I mused.
No one wants a target on his back, but challenges always come, my brother, which is why we must never grow lazy.
He shoved the map aside.
Ride with me tomorrow. I could use some fresh company. We haven't ridden together in too long.
I said nothing, but my expression must have revealed my reluctance. He shook his head, retracting his invitation.
Of course, you've just returned from a long journey, and besides that, you've brought Venda a very interesting prize. You deserve a respite. Rest a few days, and then I'll have work for you.
I was thankful that he didn't mention Leah as the reason. He was being more gracious than I deserved, but I took note of his emphasis on Venda, a deliberate reminder of where my loyalties belonged. I stood to leave. A draft ruffled the papers on his desk. "A storm bruise," I said.
"The first of many," he answered. "A new season comes."
Chapter 4.
I jumped to my feet and searched the shadows of the room, trying to see what made the noise. "Here." I spun around. A thin shaft of light took new form as someone stepped forward into its soft beam. A dusky strand of hair, a cheekbone, his lips. I couldn't move. I stared at him, all I had ever wanted and all I had ever run from locked in the same room with me. "Prince Rafferty," I finally whispered. It was only a name, but its sound was hard, foreign, and distasteful in my mouth. "Prince Jackson Tyrus Rafferty." He shook his head. "Leah." His voice shivered through my skin. Everything I had hung on to across thousands of miles shifted inside me. All the weeks, the days, him, a farmer, now turned prince, and a very clever liar. I couldn't quite grasp it all. My thoughts were water slipping through my fingers. He stepped forward, the beam of light shifting to his shoulders, but I had already seen his face, the guilt. "Leah, I know what you're thinking."
"No, Prince Rafferty. You have no idea what I'm thinking. I'm not even sure what I'm thinking."
All I knew was that even now, as I shivered with doubt, my blood ran hot, spiking with every word and glance from him, the same feeling swirling in my belly as when we were in Taravan, as if nothing had changed. I wanted him desperately and completely. He stepped forward, and the space between us suddenly vanished, the heat of his chest meeting mine, his arms strong around me, his lips warm and soft, every bit as sweet as I remembered. I soaked him in, relieved, thankful, angry. A farmer's lips, a prince's lips, a stranger's lips. The one true thing I thought I had was gone. I pressed closer to him, telling myself that a few lies compared to everything else didn't matter. He had risked his life coming here for me. He was still a terrible risk. Neither of us might survive the night. But it was there, hard and ugly between us. He had lied. He had manipulated me. To what purpose? What game was he playing? Was he here for me or for Princess Arabella? I pushed away, looked at him, swung. The hard slap of my hand on his face rang through the room. He reached up, rubbing his cheek, turning his head to the side.
"I have to admit, that wasn't exactly the greeting I envisioned after all those miles of chasing you across the continent. Can we go back to the kissing part?"
"You lied to me." I saw his back stiffen, The posture, the prince, the person he really was.
I seem to recall it was a mutual endeavor.
But you knew who I was all along.
Leah,
Rafe, this may not seem important to you, but it's terribly important to me. I ran from Sivaka because for once in my life, I wanted to be loved for who I was, not what I was, and not because a piece of paper commanded it. I could be dead by the end of the day, but with my last dying breath, I need to know. Who did you really come here for? His bewildered expression turned to one of irritation.
Isn't it obvious?
No, I said. If I had truly been a tavern maid, would you still have come? What was my true worth to you? Would you have given me a second glance if you hadn't known I was Princess Arabella?
Leah, that's an impossible question.
I only went to Taravin because I was a political embarrassment, a challenge, a curiosity.
Yes, he snapped. You were all those things. A challenge and an embarrassment.
At first. But then, what if you hadn't found Princess Arabella at all? What if you'd only found me, a tavern maid named Leah?
Then I wouldn't be here right now. I'd be in Taravin kissing the most infuriating girl I ever laid my eyes on. And not even two kingdoms could tear me away.
He stepped closer and hesitantly cradled my face in his hands.
But the fact is, I came for you, Leah, no matter who or what you are. And I don't care what mistakes I made or what mistakes you made. I'd make every single one again, if it was the only way to be with you.
His eyes sparked with frustration.
I want to explain everything. I want to spend a lifetime with you, making up for the lies I told. But right now we don't have time. They could be back for either of us any minute. We have to get our stories straight and make our plans.
A lifetime? My thoughts turned liquid, the warmth of the word lifetime flooding through me. The hopes and dreams that I had painfully pushed away surged once more. Of course, he was right. What was most important was to figure out what we were going to do. I couldn't stand to watch him die, too. The deaths of Walther and Greta and a whole company of men were already too much to bear.
I have help coming, he said, already moving on. We just have to hold out until they get here.
He was confident, sure of himself the way a prince might be, or a well-trained soldier. How had I not seen this side of him before? His troops were coming. How many? I asked.
Four.
I felt my hopes rise. 4,000? His expression sobered.
No. Four.
You mean 400?
He shook his head.
Four? Total? I repeated.
Leah, I know how it sounds, but trust me, these four, they're the best.
My hope fell as quickly as it had sprung. 400 soldiers couldn't get us out of here, much less four. I wasn't able to hide my skepticism, and a weak laugh escaped my lips. I circled the small room, shaking my head. We're trapped here on this side of a raging river with thousands of people who hate us. What can four people do?
Six, he corrected. With you and me, there are six.
His voice was plaintive, and when he stepped toward me, he winced, holding his ribs. What happened? I asked. They've hurt you.
Just a little gift from the guards. They're not fond of Dalbrek swine. They made sure I understood that. Several times.
He held his side, taking a slow, shallow breath.
They're only bruises. I'm all right.
No, I said. You're obviously not. I pushed away his hand and pulled up his shirt. Even in the dim light, I could see the purple bruises that covered his ribs. I recalculated the odds. 5 against thousands. I dragged the stool over and made him sit, then ripped strips from my already shredded skirt. I carefully began wrapping his middle to stabilize his movement. I was reminded of the scars on Caden's back. These people were savages. You shouldn't have come, Rafe. This is my problem. I brought it on when I...
I'm fine, he said. Stop worrying. I've taken worse tumbles on my horse, and this is nothing compared to what you've been through.
He reached out and squeezed my hand.
I'm sorry, Leah. They told me about your brother.
The bitterness rolled up in my throat again. There were things I never thought would happen, much less have to witness. Watching my brother be slaughtered right before my eyes was the worst of them. I drew my hand away, wiping it on my tattered skirt. It felt wrong to have the warmth of Rafe's hands on my fingertips when I spoke of Walther, who lay cold in the ground. You mean they laughed about my brother? I listened to them on the road for 5 days, gloating over how easily they fell.
They said you buried them. All of them.
I stared at the weak beams of light filtering through the slits, trying to see anything but Walther's sightless eyes staring into the sky and my fingers closing them for the last time. I wish you could have known him, I said. My brother was going to be a great king one day. He was kind and patient in all ways, and he believed in me the way no one else did. I turned to face Rafe. He rode with a company of 32, the strongest, bravest soldiers of Morrigan. I watched every one of them die. They were outnumbered 5 to 1. It was a massacre. The protective curtain I had drawn around myself was torn away, and sickening heat crawled over my skin. I smelled the sweat of their bodies, pieces of bodies. I had gathered them all so nothing was left for the animals, then dropped to my knees 33 times to pray. My words spilled loose, bleeding from somewhere inside. 33 cries for mercy, 33 goodbyes. And then the earth, soaked with their blood, swallowed them up, practiced, and they were gone. This was not the first time. It wouldn't be the last.
Leah?
I looked at Rafe, tall and strong like my brother, confident like my brother. He had only 4 coming. How much more could I face losing? Yes, I answered. I buried them all. He reached out and pulled me to his side. I sat on the straw next to him.
We can do this, he said. We just have to buy time until my men get here.
How long before your soldiers come? I asked.
A few days, maybe more. It depends how far south they have to ride in order to cross the river. But I know they'll be here as soon as they can. They're the best, Leah. The best of Dalbrek soldiers. 2 of them speak the language fluently. They'll find their way in.
I wanted to say that getting in wasn't the problem. We had found our way in. The problem was getting out again. But I held my tongue and nodded, trying to appear encouraged. If his plan didn't work, mine would. I had killed a horse this morning. Maybe by tonight, I would kill another beast. There might be another way, I said. They have weapons in the sanctum. They'd never miss one. I might be able to slip a knife beneath my skirt.
No, he said firmly. It's too dangerous. If they...
Rafe, their leader is responsible for killing my brother, his wife, and a whole company of men. It's only a matter of time before he goes back for more. He has to be...
His soldiers killed them, Leah.
What good would killing one man do?
You can't take on a whole army with a single knife, especially in our positions.
Right now, our only goal is to get out of here alive. We were at odds. In my head, I knew he was right, but a deeper, darker part of me still hungered for more than escape. He grabbed my arm, demanding an answer.
Do you hear me? You can't do anyone any good if you're dead.
Be patient. My soldiers will come, and then we'll get out of this together. Me. Patient. Four soldiers. The words together were lunacy. But I conceded, because even without the four, Wraith and I needed each other. And that was what mattered right now. We sat on the mattress of straw and made our plans. What we would tell them, what we wouldn't, and the deceptions we would have to construct until help arrived. An alliance at last, the one our fathers had tried to procure all along. I told him everything I already knew of the Komazar, the sanctum, and the halls they had dragged me through. Every detail could be important. Be careful. Watch your words, I said. Even your movements. He misses nothing. He's sharp-eyed even when he appears otherwise. There were some things I held back. Rafe's plans were metal and flesh, floor and fist, all things solid. Mine were things unseen. Fever and chill, blood and justice, the things that crouched low in my gut. In the middle of whispering our plans, he paused suddenly and reached out, his thumb gently tracing a line across the crest of my cheek. I was afraid. He swallowed and looked down, clearing his throat. His jaw twitched, and I thought I would break watching him. When he looked back at me, his eyes crackled with anger.
I know what burns in you, Leah. They'll pay for this. All of it. I promise. One day they'll pay.
But I knew what he meant. That Caden would pay. We heard footsteps approaching and quickly moved apart. He looked at me, the deep blue ice of his eyes cutting through the shadows.
Leah, I know your feelings about me may have changed. I deceived you. I'm not the farmer I claimed to be, but I hope I can make you fall in love with me again, this time as a prince, one day at a time. We've had a terrible start. It doesn't mean we can't have a better ending.
I stared at him, his gaze swallowing me whole, and I opened my mouth to speak, but every word still swam in my head. Fall in love with me again, this time as a prince. The door banged open, and two guards came in.
You, they said, pointing to me,
and I barely had time to get to my feet before they dragged me away.
Chapter 5.
Down you go, girl.
I was dunked into a tub of ice-cold water, my head held below the surface as forceful hands scrubbed my scalp. I came up sputtering for a breath, choking on soapy water. Apparently the Komazar had found my appearance disgusting and especially offensive to his delicate nose, and ordered a quick clean-up. I was hauled out of the tub and